What happens when a mother's darkest thoughts threaten to consume her? Sarah Vaughan's Little Disasters plunges readers into this terrifying question through the story of Jess Curtis, a seemingly perfect mother whose world unravels when her baby daughter arrives at the emergency room with a suspicious skull fracture. The novel has garnered praise from psychological thriller heavyweights like Paula Hawkins and Tess Gerritsen for its unflinching exploration of maternal mental health. Since its 2020 release, Little Disasters has become a book club favorite, with readers drawn to its honest portrayal of motherhood's darker side. Vaughan, a former Guardian journalist, brings her investigative skills to bear on the secretive world of maternal mental illness, creating a story that feels both intensely personal and universally relevant. As we follow pediatrician Liz Trenchard's investigation into her friend's possible child abuse, we're forced to confront an uncomfortable truth. Sometimes the most dangerous threats to children come from the people who love them most. Jess Curtis appears to be the embodiment of maternal perfection. With her copper pre-Raphaelite curls and slate gray eyes, she radiates a natural beauty that complements her seemingly effortless approach to motherhood. At their first prenatal class 10 years earlier, Jess had moved everyone with her heartfelt declaration about her unborn son. "I want my boy to know that he is the center of my world." Her sincerity gave her friend Liz hope about her own maternal abilities. But on a rainy January night in 2018, this carefully constructed image begins to crumble. Jess arrives at the emergency room with her 10-month-old daughter Betsy, who has a suspicious head injury. Her explanation doesn't align with the severity of the trauma, a skull fracture with a subdural hematoma. Even more concerning to Dr. Liz Trenchard, who examines the baby, is Jess's evasiveness about how the injury occurred and the six-hour delay before seeking medical attention. The contrast between Jess's previous maternal confidence and her current state is jarring. Once plump and glowing, she now appears gaunt and anxious. Her normally assured demeanor has been replaced by a tense, almost fearful presence. Most disturbing to Liz is how Jess claims not to have noticed the injury until Liz pointed it out, behavior completely at odds with the hyper-vigilant mother Liz has known for years. As the medical team grows increasingly concerned about the nature of Betsy's injury, Liz finds herself in an impossible position, torn between her professional obligation to report suspected child abuse and her personal loyalty to a friend she's always admired. When consultant Neil Cockerell points out that the fracture to the back of Betsy's head is consistent with a child being slammed down on a changing table, Liz can no longer ignore the red flags. Despite her reluctance, she makes the call to social services, setting in motion a series of events that will expose the cracks in Jess's perfect facade and force everyone to confront uncomfortable truths about motherhood, friendship, and the secrets we keep even from ourselves. For Dr. Liz Trenchard, the emergency room has always been a place of clarity, where symptoms lead to diagnoses and protocols dictate actions. But when her friend Jess arrives with injured baby Betsy, these professional boundaries blur painfully. As she examines the infant's skull, feeling the telltale bogginess that indicates trauma, Liz's medical training and personal loyalties wage war within her. "I don't want to think this," Liz reflects as she mentally reviews her safeguarding checklist. "I don't want to suspect my friend." Yet the evidence mounts. Jess's delayed mention of the injury, her evasiveness about the vomiting, the inconsistency between the described accident and the severity of the trauma. Each red flag adds weight to Liz's growing concern. The hospital hierarchy further complicates matters. When consultant Neil Cockerell questions whether this is a child protection issue, Liz initially defends Jess, insisting she's a good mother. But Neil's reminder of a previous medical error when Liz missed a meningitis diagnosis years ago strikes at her professional insecurity. The suggestion that her judgment might be compromised by friendship, Liz doubting herself. During the handover meeting, Neil publicly challenges Liz's failure to contact social services, humiliating her in front of colleagues. "I'm surprised at your judgment," he says, his words cutting deep. Though Liz attempts to defend herself, she ultimately concedes that Neil is right. The red flags can't be ignored. With a heavy heart, she makes the call to social services, feeling the weight of betrayal as she does so. This professional dilemma mirrors the novel's central question: what happens when our personal knowledge of someone conflicts with objective evidence? Liz knows Jess as a devoted mother, yet the medical facts suggest something sinister. In choosing her professional duty over personal loyalty, Liz sets in motion a painful unraveling that will test their friendship to its limits and force both women to confront uncomfortable truths about themselves and each other. The novel's prologue offers a chilling glimpse into maternal desperation, a mother's internal battle as her colicky infant wails inconsolably. "Shh, it's okay, baby. Mummy's here now," she pleads, while the infant stares back with livid eyes, her body arching in rage. Despite trying various solutions, vacuum noise, white noise, the washing machine's rhythmic swish, nothing soothes the child who has been crying for 8 weeks. This raw portrayal of maternal frustration continues through Jess's perspective, revealing the terrifying thoughts that plague her. When Betsy hurls food to the floor, Jess loses control and shouts at her baby. Catching sight of her twisted face in the mirror, she's horrified by her own behavior, remembering Ed's words, "I don't know you anymore." Most disturbing are her intrusive thoughts, imagining slapping Betsy or flinging her against the marble mantelpiece. These dark impulses aren't limited to Jess. The novel gradually reveals that Liz's mother harbored similar thoughts toward her own children, though with far more tragic consequences. In a devastating confession, she admits to killing Liz's baby sister Claire years earlier. "I just wanted to make her stop," she says, describing her isolation with three young children, her husband's absence, and Claire's inconsolable crying. Vaughn masterfully contrasts these dark maternal impulses with society's idealization of motherhood. Jess feels compelled to maintain her image as the perfect mother, her home immaculately ordered, her children well-dressed and well-behaved. This pressure to perform motherhood flawlessly only intensifies her anxiety and shame about her intrusive thoughts. Through Jess's eventual diagnosis with extreme postpartum anxiety and maternal OCD, the novel explores how maternal mental illness remains stigmatized and often undiagnosed. Jess's elaborate safety rituals, removing knives from the kitchen, triple sterilizing bottles, disinfecting the high chair 3 times, reveal the exhausting vigilance of a mother terrified she might harm her child. By juxtaposing Jess's struggle to resist her dark thoughts with Liz's mother's fatal surrender to them, Vaughn creates a powerful meditation on maternal ambivalence, the complex, often contradictory emotions that can exist alongside a mother's love. The novel suggests that acknowledging these feelings, rather than suppressing them in shame, might be the first step toward healing. The friendship between Liz and Jess forms the emotional core of Little Disasters, revealing how quickly trust can erode when suspicion enters the equation. Their bond, forged a decade earlier in prenatal classes, had seemed unshakable, built on shared experiences of early motherhood, late-night texts about teething babies, and the unspoken understanding between women navigating similar life stages. Yet, when Betsy arrives at the hospital with a suspicious injury, this friendship fractures almost instantly. Liz's medical training forces her to view Jess through a clinical lens, cataloging her friend's behavior as potential evidence of abuse. Meanwhile, Jess feels betrayed by Liz's suspicion, her hurt compounded by the fact that the person who should know her best now sees her as capable of harming her child. "You thought the very worst of me, that I would batter my baby," Jess later tells Liz, the pain evident in her voice. Liz's admission, "I should have realized you might be unwell," acknowledges her failure not just as a doctor, but as a friend who missed the signs of Jess's deteriorating mental health. The novel explores how friendships between mothers can be both sustaining and suffocating. The prenatal group that brought Liz and Jess together, including Charlotte, Mel, and Susie, represents a microcosm of maternal society, complete with its judgments and competitions. When news of Betsy's injury spreads, these women take sides. Mel confronts Liz in the school playground. "How could you do this to her?" she demands, defending Jess, while Charlotte quietly feeds Liz's suspicions with damning observations about Jess's parenting. Through these fractured relationships, Vaughn examines how motherhood can simultaneously connect women through shared experience while also dividing them through comparison and judgment. The novel suggests that true friendship requires seeing beyond the carefully curated images we present to the world, recognizing the struggles beneath the surface and offering support rather than suspicion. When Liz finally learns the truth about Betsy's injury, she must confront her own prejudices and assumptions. Her journey toward reconciliation with Jess parallels her growing understanding of her mother's struggles, suggesting that empathy, the ability to imagine another's pain without judgment, might be the foundation for rebuilding broken trust. Little Disasters is fundamentally a novel about secrets, the ones we keep from others and the ones we hide even from ourselves. Each family in the story harbors destructive secrets that threaten to unravel their carefully constructed lives. For Jess and Ed, the central secret initially appears to be the truth about Betsy's injury, but as the novel progresses, deeper secrets emerge. Jess's postpartum anxiety and intrusive thoughts about harming her baby, Ed's growing distance from his wife, and most devastatingly, what actually happened the night Betsy was hurt. When Ed discovers Jess's internet search history, "Why do I want to harm my baby?" his heart sinks as he confronts the possibility that his wife might be capable of violence toward their child. The Curtis family secrets extend to their son Frankie as well. His hysterical outburst, "It's all my fault she's going to prison," hints at knowledge he's been carrying alone. The truth, when finally revealed, is heartbreaking. Frankie has been protecting his mother by taking responsibility for an accident that occurred while Jess was out of the house. Liz's family secrets run even deeper, spanning generations. Her mother's alcoholism masks a more terrible truth, that she killed Liz's baby sister, Claire, years earlier. This revelation forces Liz to re-examine her entire childhood, recognizing patterns of abuse she had normalized or forgotten. "I can't believe my mother deliberately killed her," Liz thinks, even as she struggles to reconcile this knowledge with her memories of maternal violence. Charlotte Stanley appears perfect on the surface, her corporate success, her well-behaved son George, her marriage to Andrew. Yet she harbors perhaps the most destructive secret of all, her 20-year obsession with Ed and her role in Betsy's injury. Her manipulation of Frankie, coaching him to lie about what happened, and then allowing him to carry the guilt for months, reveals the lengths to which she'll go to protect herself. Through these interwoven secrets, Vaughn explores how families become complicit in maintaining false narratives. Children like Frankie learn early to protect their parents through silence. Spouses like Ed ignore warning signs to preserve their image of family harmony. And women like Jess and Liz's mother suffer in isolation, afraid to voice their darkest thoughts for fear of judgment. The novel suggests that healing begins only when these secrets are brought into the light, when shame gives way to honesty and judgment yields to understanding. As Jess tells Liz after learning about her mother's confession, "She must have been so lonely," a simple observation that acknowledges the isolation at the heart of so many family secrets. Throughout Little Disasters, Vaughn examines how contemporary motherhood has become a performance, one that demands perfection while offering little support for the inevitable struggles. Jess embodies this contradiction, presenting a flawless exterior while crumbling internally under the pressure to meet impossible standards. Her home represents this facade perfectly, immaculately ordered with meticulously folded baby clothes in perfect stacks, even as she battles intrusive thoughts about harming her child. Ed's discovery of this jarring disconnect is telling. The nursery was pristine, yet Betsy was abandoned, overheated, and sobbing with a soaked nappy. This image encapsulates the novel's critique of modern motherhood, the prioritization of appearance over authentic well-being. The prenatal group that forms the social backbone of the novel serves as a microcosm of maternal judgment. Each woman represents a different approach to motherhood, Mel, the teacher wanting a natural birth, corporate lawyer Charlotte balancing career and family, Australian expatriate Susie navigating motherhood far from support systems, and Jess, initially the confident Earth mother who seems to have it all figured out. Their interactions reveal the subtle competitions and comparisons that characterize modern maternal culture. Social media exacerbates these pressures, creating platforms where motherhood becomes a curated performance. Though not explicitly mentioned, the novel's exploration of maternal anxiety reflects our era of Instagram-perfect parenting, where mothers feel compelled to present idealized versions of family life while hiding the messy reality. Most poignantly, the novel contrasts Jess's experience with that of Liz's mother a generation earlier. Both women suffered from maternal mental illness, but while Jess's postpartum anxiety is eventually diagnosed and treated through cognitive behavioral therapy, Liz's mother received no support for her postpartum depression, with tragic consequences. This comparison highlights both progress in recognizing maternal mental health issues and the persistent stigma that still prevents many women from seeking help. Through Jess's therapy sessions, Vaughn offers a glimpse of potential healing. Therapist Tessa Farthing's direct approach, "What do you do to keep Betsy safe?" acknowledges Jess's fears without judgment. The novel suggests that true support for mothers must begin with honesty about the complex, often contradictory emotions that accompany parenthood, creating space for vulnerability without shame. As Jess leaves her first therapy session, she encounters another mother who notices her emotional state. Instead of her usual, "all good, thank you," response, Jess admits she's not brilliant, but adds hopefully, "I hope I'm going to get there," a small but significant step toward authentic motherhood beyond performance. The novel's central mystery, how Betsy sustained her skull fracture, unravels in layers, with each revelation deepening our understanding of the characters and their motivations. What initially appears to be a case of maternal abuse proves far more complex, involving a web of deception, protection, and misplaced loyalty. When Frankie finally breaks down during Liz's visit to the Curtis home, he reveals the shocking truth. Jess wasn't even present when Betsy was hurt. This confession confirms Liz's growing suspicion that Jess has been protecting her son all along, taking the blame for an accident that occurred during her absence. Through flashbacks, we learn what actually happened that Friday evening. Overwhelmed by intrusive thoughts about harming Betsy, Jess had left her children alone to get milk from the shop, promising to return in 5 minutes, but extending her absence to 13 minutes. During this time, someone knocked at the door. Charlotte, who had just seen Ed and decided to check on Jess after hearing his concerns about her being detached. Finding Frankie alone with a crying Betsy, Charlotte offered to help change the baby's dirty nappy. In the bathroom, her frustration mounted as she struggled with the task, tossing the soiled nappy on the floor. When she called Jess a naughty mummy, Frankie defended his mother angrily and shoved Charlotte. In the ensuing commotion, Betsy fell from the changing table. Charlotte's reaction revealed her true character. Rather than taking responsibility, she blamed Frankie and coached him to say he was trying to change the nappy himself when Betsy rolled off. Most manipulatively, she warned him that if anyone learned Jess had left them alone, the police would put his mother in prison. This threat effectively silenced Frankie, who repeated Charlotte's rehearsed explanation when Jess returned. This revelation transforms our understanding of the novel's central relationships. Jess's evasiveness with medical staff wasn't to hide her own violence, but to protect both Frankie from blame and herself from the consequences of leaving her children unattended. Charlotte's apparent concern for Betsy masked her role in the accident and her 20-year obsession with Ed. And Frankie's distress stemmed not from witnessing maternal abuse, but from carrying the burden of a secret too heavy for his young shoulders. The truth behind Betsy's fracture ultimately reveals the novel's most profound insight, that our attempts to protect those we love can sometimes cause more harm than the truth itself. Jess's silence allowed suspicion to fall on her, Frankie's loyalty trapped him in guilt, and Charlotte's deception poisoned multiple relationships, all because no one was willing to simply tell the truth about an accident that, while serious, was ultimately just that, an accident. The final sections of Little Disasters offer a measured sense of healing for its characters, suggesting that while some wounds never fully close, understanding and forgiveness can pave the way toward redemption. This healing unfolds across multiple relationships, demonstrating how truth, painful though it may be, ultimately liberates. For Jess, healing begins with her diagnosis of extreme postpartum anxiety and maternal OCD. Her first cognitive behavioral therapy session with Tessa Farthing marks a turning point. Finally naming her condition provides a framework for understanding her intrusive thoughts and elaborate safety rituals. Though terrified by Tessa's suggestion to remove her rings, preventing her compulsive aligning of them in threes, Jess complies, feeling the tiniest glimmer of excitement at the possibility of silencing her destructive thoughts. The relationship between Liz and Jess gradually mends as well. When Liz visits Jess at the hospital after her arrest, their conversation reveals mutual vulnerability. Jess's anger, "You thought the very worst of me," gives way to understanding when Liz shares her own crisis about her mother's confession. This exchange allows both women to see beyond their immediate conflict to the deeper struggles they share as daughters and mothers. Liz's journey toward healing involves confronting her family's painful history. Sitting by her dying mother's bedside, she attempts to reconcile her conflicting emotions, anger at her mother's abuse, horror at her confession about killing baby Claire, and unexpected compassion for her suffering. Though many questions remain unanswered, Liz finds a measure of peace in acknowledging both her mother's cruelty and her pain. "I can't believe she deliberately killed her," Liz thinks, choosing to believe her mother's actions stemmed from illness rather than malice. The Curtis family's healing process is more complicated. Though Betsy recovers fully from her injury, showing no signs of her traumatic skull fracture, Frankie continues to struggle with nightmares and anxiety. His fearful behavior at the school fair, frantically urging Jess to walk faster while looking back into the crowd, suggests lasting trauma from his interaction with Charlotte. Yet the family moves forward together, with Frankie receiving medication for his ADHD and Jess continuing her therapy. Perhaps most significantly, Ed chooses his family over his friendship with Charlotte, firmly ending their connection to prioritize Jess's recovery. This decision represents a recommitment to his marriage and a recognition of the damage caused by divided loyalties. The novel's final scene at the school sports day captures this tentative healing. As Liz watches Frankie sprint to victory while Jess cheers enthusiastically, she feels a moment of pure happiness, despite knowing that motherhood's challenges continue. When Jess notices Liz's momentary sadness, Liz reassures her friend she's fine, cherishing this perfect moment that sustains mothers through the difficult times, a quiet acknowledgement that healing, like motherhood itself, is never complete but always evolving. Little Disasters ultimately celebrates the courage required to confront our most frightening impulses and still choose love. Through its unflinching examination of maternal mental illness, fractured friendships, and family secrets, the novel suggests that true strength lies not in maintaining perfect appearances, but in acknowledging our capacity for darkness while choosing light. Jess's journey exemplifies this courage. Despite experiencing terrifying intrusive thoughts about harming Betsy, she never acts on these impulses. Her elaborate safety rituals, removing knives, excessive sterilizing, compulsive hand washing, represent desperate attempts to protect her child from herself. Even her decision to leave the house that fateful night, though misguided, stemmed from a desire to remove herself from a situation where she feared losing control. When Jess learns about Liz's mother smothering baby Claire, she experiences a profound realization. Despite her darkest thoughts, she never crossed that line. This knowledge offers both relief and perspective. Her intrusive thoughts don't define her, and with proper support, she can learn to manage them without shame. Her admission to a fellow mother outside the health center not brilliant, but I hope I'm going to get there, represents a new kind of courage, the bravery to be honest about her struggles rather than maintaining a facade of perfection. Liz demonstrates similar courage in confronting her family's painful history. Rather than continuing to idealize her childhood or demonize her mother, she works to understand the complex truth that her mother was both victim and perpetrator, shaped by her own mental illness and lack of support. Though Liz can't fully forgive her mother's abuse, she finds compassion for her suffering, recognizing how isolation and untreated depression created the conditions for tragedy. Even Frankie, young as he is, shows remarkable courage. His initial decision to protect his mother by accepting blame for Betsy's injury demonstrates his loyalty and love. Later, when he finally reveals Charlotte's role in the accident, he risks his mother's disappointment to tell the truth, freeing himself from the burden of secrecy. The novel's exploration of maternal mental illness offers a powerful counter-narrative to simplistic portrayals of motherhood. By showing how good mothers can harbor dark thoughts, how loving families can be shadowed by secrets, and how even the most careful parents can make devastating mistakes, Vaughn creates space for a more honest conversation about parenting's challenges. In the end, Little Disasters suggests that our capacity for darkness doesn't negate our capacity for love. The same mothers who experience intrusive thoughts about harming their children also feel overwhelming protective instincts toward them. This duality doesn't make them monsters, it makes them human. And in acknowledging this humanity, with all its contradictions and complexities, we find not just understanding, but the possibility of healing.